Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today's Tuesday, October 26th, 2021. Howdy, Dave.
Hey, howdy, Melody, and happy National Pumpkin Day. It's also National Financial Crimes Fighting Day. So let's make sure all of our papers are in order, ladies and gentlemen, and keep our eyes on our nation's capital, where all sorts of financial shenanigans are going on each and every day. Yeah. Hey, Melody, did you know that on this day in 1881, Wyatt Earp, who I didn't know this, was a former Kansas police officer and working as a bank security guard, and his two brothers, Virgil and Morgan, faced off against the nefarious Clanton McLaurie gang in the legendary shootout at OK Corral in where? Tombstone, Arizona. There you have it. October 26, 1881.
Well,
the gold rush.
That's true. That's very true. That is kind of interesting. You know, we go through, my great grandfather was a Kansas police officer. In fact, I don't know what town they were in, but he would have been around the same time my great grandfather was a police officer in Kansas. So maybe I'm the, no, never mind. Anyway.
Maybe he kicked Wyatt out of town just in time.
Maybe. In fact, I still have my great-grandfather's, his wooden, I don't know, but wooden baton that they used.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, pretty cool. But what also was pretty cool, well, to some of you it isn't, but for those of you who bought gold and silver today, it was pretty cool. We had a little bit of pullback in gold today. Yeah, back down under 1795, down $13. Silver was down 41, $24.24. Platinum was down 32 at 1,035. Palladium was down 53 at 2,078. USDX today was up 0.10. at 93.93, and you have the U.S., well, you have the crude oil up 85 cents at $84.61. Paper markets today, more records, probably. The Dow was up 15 points at 35,756. The S&P was up 8 at 45.74. NASDAQ was up 9. At 15,235. And let's go see what Asia markets did. It was a mixed bag. Europe was positive across the board. And the 10-year yield is 1.61%. And, you know, it's just, I guess we'll be talking about it a little bit later in the program, I guess, about the perhaps the Dems or the Democrats are aiming to strike a deal on the social spending plan within just a couple of hours. But you know what? There's so much crap in that. Excuse me for a lack of a better way to say that. There's so much stuff in there. And, you know, I didn't know that old Nancy Pelosi, well, she has like, what, $200 million for a park? For a park. That's the stuff that's in this bill. And then I was reading, Dave, and I don't mean to get off on a tangent, but I did see this right before the program. Chicago. Universal basic income. Out of the stimulus for COVID. Go under these states. It's like, hey, if you want to do a universal basic program for your citizens, don't use federal dollars. Use your own state dollars. Let the people within the state pay to have other people not work. Don't use federal programs that were supposed to be used for people during COVID and all the shutdowns and layoffs that the government herself created. I mean, it's just mind-boggling what these people are doing. And it's like, they're all for it, so they're going to pass it in Chicago. It's like, how about creating jobs? Gee, what a concept. Why don't you put people back to work instead of become loafs? Instead of giving them money, hoping that that's going to help your crime, maybe, why don't you focus on that?
It's all deal-making time right now. I hate to see this turn into a big pork bill. I'm sure we'll find out that by the time we were talking about this, that already came and went.
It's just mind-boggling what these cities are doing with these basic income programs. I mean, all over the place. You've got 40 other cities that are considering, or they're trying to start similar efforts. It's like, hey, no, jobs. Put people to work. You have businesses in your city that can't find workers. Don't tempt people not to work. Tell them to get off their butts and go to work. I don't know. I just saw that and it just really irritated me to know. And I don't know, because we talk about, you know, the universal basic program all the time, but for some reason, I think it's just because she is such a lousy mayor to begin with, as most of them anymore. And it's all coming from federal funds. Federal funds.
Yeah, we're finding out that so much of the federal dollars, mainly from the CARES Act in March of 2020, has been unspent. It's been unallocated to over a dozen programs, and they're finding, you know, with each periodically updated spending report that so much of it has been unspent, and that's where these funds are coming from. We know there's a good $600 billion that's being used from unspent monies that will fund infrastructure number one, little infrastructure, we'll call it. I'm 90% sure that that's where this UBI Chicago money is coming from.
No, it's coming from Biden's American Rescue Plan.
It's coming from the rescue plan?
Yeah.
There's authorization in the rescue plan for that? Or is it just funds allocated under the rescue plan?
The one-year pilot program funded by the nearly $2 billion Chicago received from the Biden administration's American Rescue Plan.
The one-year model. Okay. All right, then. I stand corrected.
So, yeah. You know, in the same way, this new bill, Pelosi's $200 million park. Oh, yeah, that's needed infrastructure, isn't it? It's just, anyway.
Yeah.
They ought to all be arrested.
To the victor of the spoils.
They should all be arrested, thrown in the cahoots, and thrown away the key. And it just amazes me. Well, of course, why wouldn't she be reelected? I don't know when her election is coming up in Chicago. Hey, she's giving away $500. So why wouldn't you vote for these people? They're buying their elections. That's all it's all about. Good grief. They're so disgusting. They really are. They're just disgusting. Anyway, so I saw that, and that was my pet peeve right before the program starts. So we'll move on.
Timing's everything.
You know, so we'll move on. Anyway, consumer confidence. It rose. Go figure. Go figure. The conference board, that's because people are nuts. Conference board's index advanced to 113.8 from an upwardly revised 109 reading in September. Everyone was expecting it to drop. It should have. tell me what consumers, I don't know. The data suggests that a recent drop in infections is beginning to boost consumers' outlook for the economy. They never stopped buying. How can they have a great outlook for economy when gasoline prices are beginning to rise and food prices? How can that be great? Lynn Franco, Senior Director of Economic Indicators at the Conference Board, said while short-term inflation concerns rose to a 13-year high, the impact on confidence was muted. Do people really know what inflation is, Dave? Yeah. I mean, I guess if you get $500 from your state government, I guess inflation won't bother you as much as those who don't get it or those who have to dole it out so those people can get it. Consumers were more optimistic about their future income and job prospects. The share of consumers who said jobs were plentiful, that fell slightly. Consumers are more likely to purchase cars, homes, appliances, vacation plans, which are reported every other month, also increased. So, Thursday we get the third quarter GDP. Can't wait. That's currently forecast to show that the personal spending grew at a 0.8 annualized pace in the third quarter. So we'll see how that works. That's compared with a 12% in the 3 months ending on June 30th. So they're not expecting much, Dave?
Yeah, I just saw a chart that compares the Atlanta Fed's GDP now projections, so to speak, with Wall Street projections, and certainly the Atlanta Fed numbers are way low in terms of expected GDP compared to the consensus among the Wall Street banks. It's Vegas is picking the over under at 5%. I'm going to take the under on that, Melody.
Well, it depends if they lie.
Well, there you go. That's maybe I should say I'll take the under on the third revise, downward revision 3 months from now.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's kind of hard to place a bet on a lie. But that's funny. There are signs that housing could be cooling. Prices rose 20% year over year in August. That's amazing. And which was the same as the previous month. This is according to year over year in August, and it was the same as that previous month. This is according to the S&P CoreLogic, Case-Shiller. This is the first time the annual gain hasn't increased since early 2020, which is kind of interesting, because that's all when all the lockdown went in and everything, and that's when we began to, see things change. 10-year composite annual increase was 18%. That was down from July.
The way this article is written, I mean, it's just, if you think about it, stop for a second and analyze the number. If nothing else happens now for the next 10 months, it means from July of 2021 through June of 2022, housing prices will have risen 20% year on year. Don't forget that, ladies and gentlemen. Even though the annual gain hasn't increased since early 2020, it's still up 20% over a year ago. It's sort of like, the CBO baseline we hear so often about in terms of, federal spending. Well, the budget cuts, amount to whatever, 5%, 7%. Well, it's not 5% less than zero. It's maybe 5% less than what it was going to be otherwise, which may have been an increase of 5%. So, you got to think about the numbers that we talk about, and to the extent we remember to, we'll certainly elaborate like this, so you're not scratching your heads like we often do.
Hmm. Well, you know, it seems like lumber prices are coming back, and why wouldn't it?
God.
I know. We're beginning to see those prices climb amid tight supplies. We still have a pickup in home building. Western Canada is seeing reduced output, and the U.S. South is grappling with labor shortages. Run an ad in Chicago. See if any of those people are going to go to work.
We're going to have separate metrics now for Chicago. Well, they've got money. They've got extra money in their pocket.
Yeah, well. The U.S. is also expected to double tariffs on common Canadian wood next month. This is going to also add to costs. The rise signals that home buyers are going to face elevated prices for much, much longer. Yesterday, we saw the lumber futures settle at $753 per 1,000 board feet. Now, that's more than double the pre-pandemic five-year average around $356. Wow. We've seen these wood prices. It's been volatile, whipsawing since the pandemic began. No pun intended. Mm-hmm. They touched record highs. Of course, we remember that. Then we saw the price collapse because sawmills ramped up production, and then the high prices stifled retail demand. So now we're beginning to see the market shoot up again, Dave.
Yeah, well, in British Columbia, which, you know, where a lot of this softwood lumber is used in or comes from in home building anyway, the cost of logs there have been soaring. Several sawmills there stopped production as their costs started exceeding their sales prices. Back here at home in the South, where a large amount of North America lumber is produced, labor issues apparently continue to plague the mills. Brian Leonard, he's with RCM Alternatives in Chicago, says because of the supply bottlenecks, he expects prices to keep rising through the first quarter of next year. I would think that would be at a minimum, Melody, but in either event, it's bad news for home buyers. Now, as we've been talking over the last several months, the price surge earlier this year added as much as $40,000 to the price of the average house and forced a number of construction companies to actually stop building. That's according to the homeowners. I almost said the Homeowners Association, the National Association of Home Builders. So one of the big questions apparently being asked is this going to surprise home builders like it did last year? Hmm. Well, we will see.
We will find out, and we will find out when we come back from break. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CommonSenseRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and make sure you sign up for the weekly newsletter. And I talked yesterday about premiums are rising and things are becoming delayed, but it hasn't stopped business. We've just been swamped. So, you know, if you have any questions, please do call, and please be patient with us if we have to return your call. And you can always send us an email at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com, discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. Yahoo!
A friend of mine, Melody, sorry, maybe should I ask you this off the air in between, but a friend of mine who is an occasional buyer of gold through an old business acquaintance of his said that he's having a hard time getting 2021 gold American Eagles.
Give me a call.
Have you found that?
No.
All right, good. I will.
Sold a boatload of them today.
Good.
So,
all right.
You know, now the older ones, the type ones, they're available, but the premiums are high.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the, you know, so I don't know if he's looking for those.
No, I don't think so. I think he's.
We got Buffaloes and the Eagles.
Okay.
The Eagles type twos. Nope.
Good.
If he wants 100 of them, we got them. 200, we got them. 300, we got them.
Okay. All right.
Let's go ahead and, you know, when Trump did the tax cut, I think we're always in favor of tax cuts. My voice was, doesn't do anything. You know, we end up with greater debt, just like Reagan. Everybody raves about his biggest tax cuts, but yet he left his office with a huge percentage, 100%, you know, increase in the debt. So Trump was going to do the same. It wasn't going to do anything more to bring in jobs. It wasn't going to do anything more to have people have more money in their pockets. It really did help more of the wealthy and so forth. And I'm sure it helped some in the lower classes too, but not as many as how it is always paraded, you know, just like this infrastructure bill. You know, they're leaning on the media to push it, to promote it. And the tax cuts was no difference. But what's interesting is because Biden has been trying to cancel everything that Trump did, he's going to be keeping the Trump tax cuts. It's kind of interesting. And because Biden wanted to do just reverse everything that Trump did, whether it was good or not. And there was a lot of things he reversed that really were good, believe it or not. And but he's so we'll see if that happens, if he's able to do it. I know he wanted to do some, Dave. He doesn't think there's enough votes to raise the 21% corporate tax rate to 23% or 25%.
Nope.
So I don't know if they're just going to be negotiating something, but
yeah, we'll talk about that next. I mean, it's clear from what we're reading anyway and watching that they have 49 votes for that particular provision. Kristen Sinema of Arizona, the apparent lone holdout for any increase in the corporate tax rate to fund a portion of the infrastructure package, quote unquote, even to 20, they were saying to 23%, which is sort of where the U.S. Chamber of Commerce had been telling its members to expect during a Biden, at least an early Biden administration.
I don't know. It's, I mean, I think a lot, I think most folks, you know, companies should be paying taxes. But I mean, it's got to be, if you can't target, I mean, the problem what we have, we don't have a fair tax code for anybody. You just don't go after targets and so forth. It needs to be fair to everybody. We all need to be paying the same, equal. I love the flat tax. That's the best thing, but that's never going to get done. And, you know, it's the same way. You know, you can talk about going after the billionaires with all their taxes and so forth, but that ain't going to work either. You know, it's funny. You can, even these billionaires will sit there and say, oh, yeah, we should really pay higher tax. Oh, yeah. We really should be paying higher taxes. You know, I really think the tax code should be a little bit higher. They just take their money someplace else and hide it.
which is what they're doing now.
Yeah, and then what does it do? Guess what? That's the one thing that does trickle down. It does trickle down to us. And it's just, but everybody just gets so caught up in the tagline, oh, tax those rich. The billionaires tax. That sounds great. I think we tried to do it before and it doesn't work. You know? So, I don't know. It's
billionaire Leon Cooperman, who's worth a reported $2.5 billion. He says I'm worth more than that, but he calls the billionaire tax they're considering, quote, stupid, saying it turns the tax structure upside down and fans the flame of class warfare. Instead, he said he supports an end to tax loopholes, like the one for carry interest, which allows a lot of hedge fund managers and venture capitalists to pay lower rates on one of their main forms of compensation, carried interest. So the other thing of it is, Melody, is that the billionaire tax, and whether you support it or not, is expected to raise just really $20 to $25 billion a year.
I know, it's peanuts
in taxes, and you know, certainly peanuts compared to the size of the long term cost of the programs. You know, it's a drop in the bucket. Now it could be a lot more. I mean, one of the things we don't know is how many of these assets are out there. But I'm not sure that we're going to, I mean, other things being equal, if they're already hidden offshore, I mean, Congress apparently has already backed down from its proposal to beef up funding of the IRS to the point to, you know, where they go after really the real wealthy people.
I don't think they need 87,000 new agents to go after the wealthy. There aren't that many wealthy. It's
people. They just need one smart, accurate tax agent to finish my wife's and my frickin' 2018 taxes, which we just got another notice for a $10,000 penalty and interest notice, and it's like, we filed and told you five different times. Sorry, I shouldn't be airing my personal laundry on the air, but I'm a living example of it's just not the numbers here. It's having very well trained and an underlying solid policy.
I don't mean to chuckle, but
no,
I mean, that's and just think of how many of you there are dealing with the same thing. And it's like, yeah, hey, you know what? A flat tax. Give me a postcard. This is what I made. You know, this percentage of that equals this. Here you go. Thank you.
God, yes.
How simple is that?
Bye-bye.
You know?
It's a system of, by, and for the accountants and lawyers.
Yeah.
And the U.S. tax court.
Yeah, but the
anyway.
Whole, I know, and it's just so corrupt in so many ways. It's just, let's go ahead and we're just going to talk briefly about Janet Yellen, the data lady. I guess, when does Fed Chair Jerome Powell's season end?
Early February, February 4th or 5th or something like that, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Well,
his term as chair, he has another several years as a member of the Board of Governors, but
as a chair.
Yeah.
Well, Janet Yellen defended his record on regulating the financial system amid attacks by progressives seeking to deny him a second term. She expressed some misgivings about rulemaking under his watch, but it's been another story recently. Oh, yeah, you know, just some misgivings, you know. That's we're not going to do anything, just misgivings, you know. Give me a break.
Oh, be specific.
So, declining to say how she would advise the president on his decision to reappoint Powell, Yellen on Sunday said that the financial rules had markedly strengthened under Powell's term, as they did during her time at the Fed and under her predecessor, Ben Bernanke. Oh, yeah, of course. They strengthened, all right. Strengthened to what? You know, how much does what's the debt of the Fed anymore? How many billions or trillions of dollars still going into the repo market at night? You don't hear anybody talking about that anymore. Don't talk about all those. But, oh, yeah, and they strengthened the financial. Yeah, it's. But anyway, she told CNN's Jake Tapper. He's a piece of. Anyway, that is a. Pandemic added stress to the financial markets. The core of our financial system did very well because of improvements in capital liquidity, risk management, and stress testing. Are you kidding me?
Nope. She's not kidding.
You got to be kidding me. The only reason the financial system did okay was just because of the amount of money and using the same programs that they used back in 2008 to keep the system going. It really is amazing. They're just patting themselves on their backs for a job well done, thinking that, you know. Anyway, Dave, what have you say on that?
Well, I'm not sure you really want to know how I feel about this. I know, I mean, who knows who's going to be nominated, and I have a feeling we're going to know by the end of the year. I wonder if Yellen's compliments, if you will, are sending a signal that perhaps Biden has already made a decision, or maybe it's nothing more than Yellen just continuing to put in a word for her guy, hoping that, you know, the inner circle of the inner circle in the Oval Office are, you know, is listening. And the stakes are huge. And Dennis Kelleher, who's president of the Anti-Wall Street Advocacy Group Better Markets, a group worth following, I might add, Melody, because like Yellen and some of her predecessors, these people are data driven, and they're not messing around. you know, along the lines of, I beg to differ, Mr. Powell. But she said that Yellen's defense of Powell's regulatory record was dead wrong. Now, of course, Kelleher isn't saying who he'd like to see appointed. I scrolled their pages earlier today to see if I could find out. But he does believe that the selection of the next Fed chair should not be made with an automatic or status quo bias toward the incumbent. And that certainly is a real important consideration, because with perceived volatility, and at least as measured by the VIX index, it's lower, it's as low as it's been now in a while. But that in and of itself, I think, might give a guy like Biden, more of a traditionalist, even though he's surrounded by some who aren't averse to going big, if you will, or different. I think there's a natural tendency here to be, to stay with a guy like Powell, who's a registered Republican, let's not forget, whose reappointment, on the one hand, could deliver some Republican votes. However, I'm not sure at the expense of how many fellow Democratic votes it would come with, because you got particularly the progressive wing of the Senate, Melody, that wants little, if anything, to do with Powell for four more years.
Yeah, but Dave, they're all the same.
Well, that's...
I mean, they're all the same. And then their one goal is all together, just to keep it going. So No matter who they appoint, is they're just going to have to, you know, just continue to do what they're told to do and do so that, you know, they can keep Wall Street happy, keep the system from failing, create new programs or use the ones. I'll have to say, Bernanke really was he wasn't the only one. But they created the programs back in 2008, all the big bailouts and so forth. And they just used it again, and they'll use it again and again and again. But, you know, our debt is so much higher now than what it was. Is that going to make a difference?
Well,
should.
We're going to find out.
We're going to find out.
I'm not sure we want to.
And
that's a good point.
Oh, we're out of time. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoices.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
One more time, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Ellie's taking care of business. Other business, important business, client business is final segment. Call her at 1-800-375-4188. 800-375-4188. Our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. As Melody mentioned, you can sign up for our free weekly newsletters and blogs at dgscoins.com. DGScoins, one word, .com. Corporate America, well, they're shelling out higher wages to employees, and business executives expect to continue doing so. According to its new quarterly survey released yesterday by the National Association of Business Economists, a record high 58% say they increased pay at their companies during the third quarter. Just about the same number expects that trend to continue in the months ahead. That's according to NAB President David Altig, who's an executive VP at the Atlanta Fed. He said two-thirds of respondents anticipate an increase in real GDP between 3 and 5.9%. That's from third quarter over third quarter, while 28% forecast real GDP to grow between 0.1 to 2.9%. Now, that's inflation adjusted. NAB survey chair Eugenia Aleman, who's the chief economist for the U.S. Energy Information Administration, added, the finance, insurance, and real estate sector experienced a strong third quarter, while the transportation, utilities, information, and communication sectors suffered the largest deterioration across the board. Now, one third of panelists indicates that the biggest downside risk to their company's outlook is increased cost pressures. The biggest upside risk, a subsidence, a leveling off, a drop in COVID-19 cases and consumer fears. Now, here's some of the highlights from this NAEP report, and I'm talking about a lot of numbers here. Two-thirds of respondents, 66%, anticipate an increase in real GDP between 3 and 5.9% third quarter over third quarter. Almost two-thirds, 65%, report that sales increased in the third quarter of 2021. That's slightly less than the 66% who reported increases in the second quarter in the July survey. Now, the share reporting a decrease in sales increased from 3% to 6% from July to September. The percentage of panelists reporting rising profits minus the percentage reporting falling profits in the third quarter is 25. That's a strong reading, but also a marked decline from the second quarter record high reading of 35. Now, interestingly, no respondents indicate their firms charged lower prices during the third quarter, and none expect their firm to cut prices over the next 3 months. Goods-producing firms lead the increase in price hikes, with 85% of respondents from that sector reporting that their firms charged higher prices in the third quarter, and 92% expecting price increases during the upcoming fourth quarter. We're in the fourth quarter. 70% report cost increases in the third quarter. That's up from 61% in the second, of course, led again by transportation, utilities, information, and communications. The percentage of respondents indicating that wages rose in the third quarter increased to 58%. That's up from 51% 8% in July and is the fifth consecutive quarterly increases for wages. Hiring slowed during the third quarter. 30% cite increased employment at their firms, with 7% reporting declines. 47% report shortages of skilled labor during the quarter. That's a big issue compared to 32% in July. 38% report that capital spending rose at their firms, up from 34% in the second quarter. 5% of them noting declining investment over the third quarter. Now, no word in those numbers, and I didn't look that closely to see if those numbers include or exclude stock buybacks. I believe they probably exclude them. Now, none of the panelists indicates that their firm's labor shortages are going to abate by the end of this year. 61% indicate that their firm's sales volumes have already returned to their normal level of operation compared to the pre-pandemic period. Average hourly earnings up 4.6% over the last year, rising from 1,027 per week last September to 1,074 this year. That's according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. In the sector most in need of workers, construction, which has seen pay jump 7%, leisure and hospitality, where it surged over 11.2%. Now, starting this past May, job openings exceeded the number of job hunters, and wages are bound to continue their rise as employers compete even harder for what I'm going to call stubborn and powerful labor. Ladies and gentlemen, we're a long way from what is usually seen as a sustained economic rebound, much less a recovery. Please keep that in mind as you decide what to do with your disposable investable income in the days, weeks, and months ahead. The coming months in that respect should be really, really good for gold and silver. Now, our friends at Wall Street on Parade, Pam and Russ Martins, talk about some of their insights mostly on Tuesdays, sometimes both Tuesdays and Thursdays. But they report in their newsletter today that Saul Amirova, who's President Biden's nominee to head the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, the OCC, well, that's the federal regulator of the biggest banks in the country, and she's the author of a new paper titled The People's Ledger: How to Democratize Money and Finance the Economy. Now, to achieve that so-called democratization, her paper proposes these things. One, move all commercial bank deposits. Listen to this. Move all commercial bank deposits from commercial banks to so-called Fed accounts at the Federal Reserve. These would be new accounts. Allowing the Fed, in extreme and rare circumstances, when the Fed's unable to control inflation by raising interest rates, to confiscate those deposits in order to tighten monetary policy. Allowing the New York Fed, when there arises in market value at rates that suggest a bubble trend, such as, you know, technology stocks today, to short these securities, thereby putting downward pressure on their prices. Also proposes to eliminate the FDIC that insures bank deposits and consolidate all bank regulatory functions at, yes, the OCC, which, of course, Amirova has been nominated to head. Now, the Martins believe, rightly so, the threat that Amirova poses to financial stability here in the U.S. is that she wants to further concentrate all major aspects of the U.S. banking system in the hands of the Fed. And we know the Fed's a captured regulator whose 12 regional bank tentacles, let's call them, are literally owned by the banks. They regulate. I mean, it's an inherent conflict. Amirova doesn't offer one suggestion about restructuring the Fed so that it's not owned or controlled by the banks. In her paper, Omarova characterizes the current relationship between the Fed and the banks as the Fed running a franchisor ledger to assist its franchisee in the banks. But as the Fed's secret $29 trillion bailout of the too big to fails on Wall Street and their foreign derivative counterparties proved, that was following the financial crash in 2008, it's actually the banks that are cracking the whip and the Fed affably doing their bidding. And that means the mega banks are the franchisor. And all they've done is shifted their fake bank examinations and fake stress tests to the Fed. To the Fed. They've transferred it to the Fed for appearance's sake. This point's further demonstrated, according to Martins, by the fact that during the Fed's 2007-10 bailouts, most of the Fed's emergency lending programs were farmed out in no-bid contracts to the very banks being bailed out. We've talked about it recently. Too big to fail, J.P. Morgan Chase, a five-count felon, continues to have a contract with the Fed to serve as custodian of more than $2 trillion of the Fed's agency mortgage-backed securities. This further proof as to who owns whom, the Federal Reserve Board of Governors has outsourced its major functions to the privately owned New York Fed. New York Fed's largest private shareholders are the too big to fail banks. J.P. Morgan Chase, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Bank of New York Mellon, and the like. Remember that New York Fed bank examiner, whistleblower, I guess, Carmen Segarra? She bought a tiny tape recorder and secretly recorded 46 hours of tape. Segarra filed a federal lawsuit charging that when she attempted to write a negative report on Goldman Sachs, she was first bullied by her colleagues at the New York Fed and then fired for refusing to change her test results. As additional proof that the New York Fed doesn't function like a public servant, just look at the salaries. The president of the New York Fed receives a larger check than the president of the United States. $506,300 for John Williams, $400,000 for Joe Biden. The New York Fed is so deeply in bed with Wall Street banks that instead of using the franchisor-franchee analogy, Omarova should have thought along the lines of the Stockholm Syndrome. The Fed is completely enthralled by its captors. Oh, enthralled, the Martins say, that one of the first things that former Fed Chair Janet Yellen did after leaving the Fed was to sign up at a speaker's bureau and earn millions upon millions of dollars in speaking fees from some of the same characters she was in charge of regulating. Sometimes politics does not make strange bedfellows. They're as familiar as can be. So with that as the backdrop, here's what Omarova proposes in her paper. First, deposits, again, at commercial banks would be replaced with, quote, Fed accounts. In principle, she says, Fed accounts can be made available as an alternative to bank deposit accounts upon a person's request, of course. But she says the more effective option would be to transition all deposits to the Fed. For U.S. citizens, individual Fed accounts would be opened automatically upon birth or naturalization. These accounts would also be credited automatically with regularly received federal benefits like Social Security payments, tax refunds, and all other disbursements that depends on citizenship status, like monthly child tax credits. Now, secondly, the New York Fed would overtly insert itself into the stock market. Under this proposal, Omarova writes, the New York Fed would make regular purchases and sales of a broad range of stocks and other tradable securities with an explicit view to smoothing volatile swings in so-called systemically important prices. To this end, the New York Fed would establish a separate trading portfolio, replicating as close as possible the market portfolio, in effect another index fund reflecting the values of all financial asset classes constituting the financial market as a whole. Conversely, the Fed would go long in particular asset classes that appear to be artificially undervalued in order to avoid unnecessary market dislocation. And if a particular asset, mortgage-backed securities or technology stocks rises, particularly at rates that suggest a market bubble, the New York Fed trading desk would literally short these securities, putting downward pressure on their prices. The Martins smartly imagine the field day that hedge funds would have with this idea. They would simply jump on board whatever the New York Fed is shorting and drive the share price of a particular security to zero. I mean, the Fed's already artificially suppressing interest rates by buying up $120 billion a month in Treasury debt in the agency MBS. Amarova would add to that a portfolio, you know, the ability to manipulate stock market prices. And last, fairly quickly here, although the paper says this tool is to be reserved only for extreme and rare circumstances when the Fed's unable to control inflation by raising interest rates, it's important to have a mechanism in place for draining excess liquidity from these accounts with minimal disruption and productive activity. What a scary thought. Question is, who's going to watch the new wolves overseeing the modernized hen house? Amarova? Well, you talk about mission creep of the Fed. Pay attention, loyal listener, and watch what our so-called leaders do in the coming months, not what they necessarily say. While words do matter, as Melody likes to say, the rich keep getting richer and more powerful, and they're going to try to use that additional power to keep the rest of us in our place. And that's all the time we have for today's show. I'll return on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Join them as Wendy talks about her recent vaccine research. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to our loyal listeners for tuning into Financial Survival. Bye-bye.